Go to the Ayolis on page 254. Hashem's koil is yicholel. It causes the Ayolis to be afraid, to shake, to quiver. And we learned the very beautiful Rashi says that the word what's the Ayolis? Why specifically are we referring to the Ayolis? So Rashi taught us the Ayolis is a metaphor for the nations of the world. Why? Because the Ayolis have straight legs. And the advantage of having a straight leg, legs that are straight, it gives them a stature, it gives them strength. They don't move. They are secure and strong. Thus, the Umayis Olam today, many of them are very secure. They're very happy with themselves. They feel they're secure. Nothing can happen to them. No, they will not waver. And although that may be true today, in the times of Mashiach, these nations that in the past were like the metaphor of the Ayolois, the female Ayol, which has strong legs and is very powerful. Baruch Shalom Aleichem. I haven't seen you in a week. Good to see you in the person. The Ayolois, the day will come when the times of Mashiach, the Ayolois will quiver. They will shake. They will be terrified. That's one interpretation. Now the other interpretation, this not was a mirage, but the Ayolois also generally refers to swiftness. Naphtali Ayolos Shelucha. Everyone knows the famous story when they came to bury Yaakov Avinu, and Esav protested that he will not allow his brother to be buried in the Ma'or Samachpela because Esav said, I'm the Bechor. So they said, this is ridiculous. You sold the firstborn right to your brother Yaakov long ago at the time when Avraham died, and you came back from the Sodeh and you were hungry, and he was preparing the Sudas Havra for the Avel, and Esav said, "Nu, I'm so hungry, give me the porridge, and I will sell you for the porridge, I will sell you my firstborn right." And so therefore, you don't have a right, it's lost. So he says, "Lo hayu lahadam, lo hayu dvarim me'olam, no such thing." So they sent Naphtali to retrieve it. Why Naphtali? Naphtali was an Ayolah. Naphtali is called the Ayolah, and he ran swiftly with Zrizus to go back all the way back to Mitzrayim to retrieve the deed. And in the meantime, everyone knows the story that Serach Bas Osher was deaf. Was it snow?
No.
Sorry. Who was it? It was
Ben Don
said, "What is going on over here? What's the delay?" So they said, Esav is holding up the show. So he says, Esav is holding up the show. He took out his sword and he killed him on the spot. And there's Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Why, what does Chaim Shmulevitz say? Chaim Shmulevitz says because why Dafka, the son of Don? Because he was deaf. Chushim ben Don. And I see that fits in very good. Vayechasoif is the next word, Chushim. Chushim, it fits in very well into the Pasuk. Kol Hashem Yecholel Ayolois. This is Naphtali. Naphtali is the Ayolah Shulucha. And then when the Ayolah Shulucha was dispatched, who stood up to the plate? Chushim. That's really rumors in the next word. Vayechasoif Yeorois. Vayechasoif, I mean, you have to really fit in, you have to really be very creative to fit this into the pasuk, but it was Chushim and Don. He got up and he killed him. And Chaim Shmulevitz, a very slow on the tangent, Chaim Shmulevitz says, why Dafka Ben Don? Chushim Ben Don, because he was not part of the negotiations. When you're part of the negotiations, little by little you break down and you get used to it. You become tolerant. And that's human nature. When you slowly break down a person, but when a person hears for the very first time something shocking, he's in shock. He completely doesn't he's in shock. I'll tell you just a very, very good story. Even though really going off a tangent, because it's so fresh in my mind. Someone told this story to me on Shabbos, right before Mincha. Fascinating story. This story is the first story in the making of a Gadol. You know what that book is? Rabbi Nosson Kamenetsky Zechet Tzadik Livracha. He wrote a book, he wrote actually a two-volume book, about Gedolei Yisrael. Very interesting stories, insights. It's not available, this book, because some people don't like what it says in the book. It's not easy to get a hold of this book, but I think he told me the first story in the book. I do not know all the names. And illustrates the point over here with Chushim Ben Dan, and really alluding to what we're learning over here today, just a little drop. And the story is as follows. When the Sridei Esh came to Slobodka, who is the Sridei Esh? Of Noach, Yechiel Michal, Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Okay, he was a Goyin Shebegoyin. Yechiel Michal Weinberg, he was a Talmud in Slobodka. He came to Slobodka, and when he first arrived, he was there for a short time. And he sat and learned, and he got so involved in the learning, he forgot to daven mincha. He was completely arangitan in the learning. He forgot to daven mincha. Totally forgot daven. Can you imagine? He missed mincha. Period. And he was fatracht in learning. Now meikar adin is potter. Okay, terasay umnasay yipotter. Doesn't seem they always davened. Doesn't seem they davened. They learned, they were so deeply immersed in learning, they're still the Chazonish even about this. Chazonish, Myrif, Chazonish, people that were so deeply immersed in learning, they didn't daven. Okay? But Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, he was a bochor, a young boy, and he was immersed in learning, and it bothered him very, very much. He went to the altar of Slobodka and he said to him, you know, I didn't daven mincha. I was so deeply immersed in learning, I did not daven mincha. The altar of Slobodka didn't respond. He was stoic. He just, nothing. He didn't twitch. And it bothered him very much. Why didn't he react? Okay, we don't know all the details. The Altar of Slobodka told him, I don't know when, shortly thereafter, that soon is coming to the yeshiva, I don't know this person the name, he told me the name, it's in the book, I assume. There was a goyin, a very great holy person that would come to the yeshiva of Slobodka, an older person, an elderly person, to learn during a certain time of the year. And when he would come, he was a celebrity. And the Altar of Slobodka every year would assign one of the students to be this person's chavrusa, to learn with him the chavrusa. Because this person, you know, he came to the yeshiva, he wanted, so he told the Altar, please give me a student, you know, one of the good students to learn with me. So the Altar told Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, this Sridei Esh, he told him a few days later, this person is going to soon come, this time of the year. You will be his chavrusa. I'm assigning you to learn with him on one condition. You tell him what you told me. You tell him that you miss mincha, that you were learning, deeply immersed in learning. That's the condition. It was supposed to be a big gedula to get to learn with him. A prize. Big only the best of the best would learn with this person. So he says, there's a price to pay. You're going to learn with him. But I demand, isn't this a strange story? I demand that when you learn with him, at some point, you must tell him what happened when you came here. Okay, fine. So this person came. He was a very, obviously, it seems from the story, he was a very distinguished person. And for some reason, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg could not bring himself to tell him what happened. But that was the condition. That was the condition. But he just couldn't do it. So the Altar of Slobodka kept on badgering him. Did you tell him what happened? Not yet. Vayehi hayoyim. He told him what happened. And when he told him what happened, this person, I forgot, as a shame, I don't know his name, he fainted on the spot. He fainted. You missed Mincha? And he fainted. His fainting made an incredible, powerful way, it's the way he gave over the story to me, an impact on Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, what a mincha is. That when you tell this gadol, the name of a gadol, you tell this person, you know, I miss mincha. And this person faints for real. It made an impact. And then he understood why the altar did not twitch. Because the altar knew, this is the way the story was presented to me, I have to see everything inside, but the altar heard that this boy, who was going to be one day from the Gedol Yisrael, saw that he forgot Davening Mincha. Not Davening Mincha demands a major reaction. And the altar of Slobodka felt he wasn't up to it. He wasn't up to it to give the Musar, the proper Musar to his student. So instead of making believe he was shocked and expressing something which would not present the full impact of what he wanted, the message, he right away was a genius from the altar. I have a solution. There's someone coming here who will give the proper response to such a crime of forgetting to daven mincha. So he just didn't twitch. He held himself back, and when this person arrived, and he told him, "You tell it to him," and that person fainted, it had a major impact on this person to appreciate what it means not to daven mincha. So why am I telling you this? Because that's the same thing that happened with the Chushim, when Chushim Ben Don. Chushim Ben Don, when he heard that they're holding up the burial of Yaakov Avinu because Esav claims a lie, sheker, you have to understand the crime. It's an incredible crime. It's not just that, you know, he's playing games. Sheker. Yaakov is an ish emes. Appreciate the depth of what happened in this maisa. Yaakov Avinu was an ish emes. Titein emes liyakov. And now he died. The last thing you do to a person who died is you bury them. And you need, the Gemara says, you need mazel. The Gemara says, until the last shovel. There are no guarantees in this world for nothing. Not even after a person dies. He needs a lot of mazel that he should be buried in peace. You know, 9/11, not everyone was zecher to kavur. People were vaporized. Mamash vaporized. No, there's mamash no mamashes of their body. Nothing. Vaporized. Everyone, you need g'reisa z'chusim. To have a kavura, kavuras Yisrael, kedasu chedin with no trouble, the cemetery doesn't hold up the show, v'chulu v'chulu. And Yaakov Avinu knew he died. He lived a life of emes, a very difficult life, running away from his brother Esav. His whole life, he was a fugitive his whole life. From the moment he sold the Bechorah to Esav, then came the story with Yaakov, with the Brachas, Birchas Yitzchak, and his mother. He runs to Lavan, he runs with Esav. Eliphaz wants to kill him. Then he comes back. Esav comes to greet him with 400 men, wants to kill him. A whole life running away from Esav. He finally dies. Oh, finally, it's over. It's over, right? The struggle is over. He dies. So now I can be buried, I can have peace. Menucha, menucha. Shalom al, v'yavai b'shalom al mishkavai. Right, yavai b'shalom. No, it ain't over. Even after you're dead, they're coming after you. Esav doesn't want to let him be buried. Why? Sheker. Based on sheker. I'm the Bukhar, you're not the Bukhar. I never sold it to you. A total lie. And who runs to go retrieve the documents? Naphtali. In the meantime, now who was deaf, didn't know what was going on over here, was not privy to all of the inside information? Chushim ben Dan. Chushim ben Dan, he heard what happened, he was shocked, and like this Godol who fainted, and he fainted, so too, Chushim ben Dan was shocked, and the shock led to, he killed him on the spot.
My son is doing a lot of research with Chushim ben
Dan. Oh, yeah, because you
I think you're missing the point. The point was, the way I understand it is that the brothers, Esav claimed that they never sold the field, that he did not sell it to Judah. And Yaakov gave it to Leah. Yaakov gave his portion to Leah. That was his business. But I am entitled to the second one. So what do? They had a deed. And Naphtali ran to get the deed. In the meanwhile, Chushim ben Dan, he did not know what was going on.
Right.
All he saw was that his grandfather was in the Zion.
Right.
And therefore he acted. But I'm always curious, what would have happened if Chushim ben Dan would have been born? So he didn't ask, what should be done. He just did it on his own. And, in my feeling, Pinchas, when he saw there was a terrible tragedy going on, he asked. Pinchas did ask. He asked Moshe what to do. But Chushim ben Dan did not. He just acted on reflex, just not knowing what was going on.
Reflex!
Right. This is my own feeling. That's a very dangerous thing because when you act on reflex, you can be wrong.
Okay.
That's true.
Yes. It's true. A person has to be very. I mean, it depends. You only have one chance. You have only one chance to be a kanoi.
My friend once told me a story. He was taking some young boys. They were very troublesome boys. He took them to a museum or something, and they were going around. And all of a sudden, the person who was in charge of everything, he gives a big bang. He says, "Somebody stole money from my cash register." So the counselor, he went over to one boy and he smacked him.
Ooh.
He smacked him, and he was right. That boy
was the guy.
Yeah. But what would have happened if he would have been born? He really did know. He was right. I'm saying, but you have to be very careful when you act on reflex because it could be so.
In 19, what happened to Kosar?
The answer is, if he wouldn't have been right now, he would have been right a different time.
Well,
if he didn't deserve it for now, he would have deserved it another time.
All right, but you can't do it that way. Somebody tries to find the baby screams at the wrong boy, or whatever.
During the war, when they took back the Kaisel, when they got the Kaisel, so there was a person there. There's a whole write-up on this big story. You got a whole book on this. There was a person there once spoke about this. So there was one of the generals, one of the people there, made a decision with no one gave him permission, bring in the bulldozers, and raise the entire area of the Kaisel Plaza. There was no government permission to do this. There was no, if he would have not, whoever this person was, you told me the whole story.
I heard it was Teddy College.
If they would not have, he now would have done that, it was acted on impulse.
At that moment,
today, the Kosovo would look like? Like East Jerusalem. You'd have to go, there would be no Coastal Plaza today. Today, the Coastal Plaza will look like a Beis HaKisei, Rachmana Litzlan. That's what it would look like today. But it's only because someone acted on impulse. Do it now. Don't get permission. Don't look for trouble.
And the guy was a leftist.
That's a Pelham. Lubavitcher Rebbe was begging. This is the famous bomb. Just bomb the Temple Mount. Just destroy the. Just now is the Shas HaKosha. If you'll do it now, you'll get it. You'll get away with it. Do it now. Just bomb the whole Temple Mount. Get rid of them. And if you wait, it. Here we are today. No one's going nowhere. Stuck. So you're right. You have a moment. There are times in life where you have that moment. And if you don't take advantage of that moment, you can't do it. It's just...
But you can also be wrong. I mean,
that's the problem. You're right. That's the problem. It can trigger World War III. Could have triggered World War III. You do the wrong thing at the wrong time. It's not the Shas HaKosha. And Rahman al-Islam, it could trigger terrible tragedy. You're right. Where do you draw the line? How do you know? You need Siyat HaShemayim.
There's the famous case of what he's saying, the Yoshio didn't want to give access to whatever it is, you know, to go through the land. And he, you know, that they have a...
Paro Nechoi.
He should have asked the Navi there.
Yes.
But he didn't ask the Navi.
No, he told him, he actually did. He told him no. He told him no, Yirmiyah.
You were shot through with the word, you know, it's no body.
He told Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah told him, don't you dare. He did ask.
He did, he didn't listen.
Yirmiyah told him, don't do it. It says the Farish. Yirmiyah told him, do not allow them. Don't do what you're doing. Allow them to pass.
I recall that he darshan the pasuk that...
The Cherev Le'Savar B'Yartzachem.
I thought he didn't. My understanding was he did not.
Okay, maybe you're right. Okay, but going back to our topic, so over here, in addition to the simple interpretation, over here refers to the swift. It's discussing of an entirely different concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to Yecholel. Yecholel over here means to bring pachad, means shock. And what I think it means over here in this context, it means going to be a pause. When a person is in shock, what do? They stop. When a person, you're going somewhere, you're moving forward, and then you hear information that is not what you expected. What's the reaction? You're in shock. What is shock? You stop. You just stop. A person is running. The ayalois is a metaphor for swiftness. Creatures who are in the process of motion, movement. They're going. Naphtali ayaloh shelucha. Naphtali was the swiftest. And then you hear information that you did not expect. Even the swiftest, the people who are you expect. There's a Gemara. Talks about one of the stories in Tanakh. Where if you want to slow down someone, you tell them bad news. You tell someone bad news, and they'll stop. It will prevent them from moving forward. So if you take the word ayolois as a metaphor for people that are in motion, not just, you know, they're walking slowly, they're moving very quickly. They're in motion to achieve an objective in record time. And then you frighten them, they stop. The Umay Sa'olam have a mission to make trouble, a mission to drive the world off the cliff. Someone was joking with me yesterday on Shabbat. Shabbat says, you know, when you come to Shemayim, they ask you a whole bunch, and they told me all these, I don't remember all the details, I'll just tell you what I remember. They ask you, Asakta, Bepriya Urviya? We always say, Bepriya Urviya. Kava itim l'toira? All the other six questions. So he says now they have a new version. There's a new version. Instead of saying a kavata itim l'toira, did you teach CRT? Did you teach critical race theory? Did you teach the world that America was established only for the purpose of slavery? Whole new set of curriculum. Asakta b'pri revia, were you Isaac in depopulation? Rabbi Michal, you like that one? Rabbi Michal, again, I don't know if everyone here gets that. Rabbi Michal understands that one. Were you Isaac in Isaac? Don't worry about the population of the world. If in Shemayim they say, it's a pelvic thing. The Goyim, they're talking about this openly. You know, I read this article, clearly, they talk about these people who the world has 7.5 billion people. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And these big scientists, they say, lichatchila, the world should not have more than 500 million people. The world can't, the world cannot support more than a half a billion people. Bidiavet, we're willing to accept 2 billion people. But to say, right now, the world, it's unsustainable. 7.5 billion people, it's unsustainable. And what's going to be in 20 years from now? It's unsustainable. We have to do something. This is out in the open. I'm not making this stuff up. So I understand in Chazal, we're mispalel every day for Tchiyas HaNesim. We're not satisfied with what we have now. We want there to be Tchiyas HaNesim. How many people lived from the time of creation until this point in time? Who knows how many billions and billions and billions. We're not worried about the population. And what's the question that they're asking Shemayim? Asakta, Bipriya, Urviya? So Chazal are not worried about the world population. Clearly, they're not disturbed. If we're mispalel, one of the Yud Gimel Ikodim of Emuna of Tchiyas HaNesim, and it's one of the questions that is asked the person when he comes to Shemayim, what did you do in this world to increase the world population? Whenever you hear talk about this in the news, in these seminars, in these forums, the World Economic Forum, all these things, and they have talk about what we have to do in the world to control world population, this is the ultimate kefirah. Let Hashem worry about it. Let Hashem worry about the world population.
If I can add something, someone who wrote a book on this subject that influenced me a lot, at the time he wrote that only the U.S. and Israel, they were the only first world nations not to go below the replacement rate. Although recently the U.S. has dipped below the replacement rate, so that I guess just leaves Israel, and even the seculars.
Wow.
Are above the replacement.
So the only country in the world that's increasing the population is Israel.
The only country in the civilized
world.
Industrialized world.
Still above the line. So over here we have there's some people in this world that Mom is trying to off the cliff.
A lot of them are going to go out of business in the generation. They're all going to age out. No one knows.
But there are people. According
he says statistically, he's sort of a BT. He bases it on religion. You lose faith, you lose
absolutely. Everything comes bound down to religion. That's the MS. Everything is all about.
That's why Europe is dying, and other nations, like Iran and Japan, where religion is dying. Then there's no motivation to
marbe kavod
shemayim.
Everything is just a disguise for religion. That's the truth. All these policies and all these things is just coming to disguise. And they said every child that's killed by gun violence, 266 children are aborted. 200 for every one child in this country that's killed by a weapon, a gun, gun violence. 266 children are aborted in their mother's womb. So here you have people that are so obsessed about violence, mamish are stealing and they obey. What about the unborn child? He's even more vulnerable. And we're not talking over here for, we're talking about the people, the children that are, the fetuses that are very well developed. They're in late stage. 266 children are aboard for every. So how could it be that 2 weeks ago they're screaming about abortion, and this week they're screaming about mamish a student and they obey? Be consistent. Either everyone should go or everyone should live. You be consistent. It's all about religion. That's what it comes down to. Kol Hashem Yicholel Ayolois. So according to the interpretation, there are creatures in this world. There are people in this world that are driving the world off the cliff. And when Mashiach will come, the Shvach will come along, and he will be Yecholel. He will bring upon them terror. And that terror will trigger in them a halt. The Gemara says, if you want to stop a person from chasing, the person is chasing after you. Now the Gemara is coming back a little bit. It's chasing after you. And you want him to stop in his tracks. You tell him bad news. You tell him this person that you know died. And they're going to slow down. And then you tell them another piece of bad news. That's human nature. Fear stops a person in their tracks. It slows them down. The nations of the world are the Ayolois. They're running, 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 running. Where are they running? They're running to take this world and throw it off a cliff. With denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence and instituting policies and crazy things in this world to deny the world from achieving its true mission. They're running, 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 and as Mashiach comes, they're accelerating their pace to take the world and throw it off a cliff. When Mashiach will come, the Koil Hashem will come forth to reveal Mashiach is here. You know what's going to happen to these people that are running, running to take the world and holding their hands and throw? Yecholel. They're going to be shocked. And when a person is in a state of shock and fear, what does he do? He stops. He stops. A red light. That's human nature. That's another a homiletic interpretation of this pasuk. Vayechesoif ye'orois. Now this is a very interesting idea, what this means over here. Uveheicholoi kuloi oimer kavod. The word vayechesoif means to expose. Deforestation. Is that the correct term? Remember chol? Deforestation, where you torch a forest. Forest is a place where you cannot navigate because of the mighty trees. But when there's a fire, a forest fire, and all the trees burn to a crisp, then the field is exposed. The word vayechasof means to expose, to uncover, to reveal the ye'orois, the forest. The forest is a metaphor for the nations of the world. As we mentioned in the beginning of this mizmor, we mentioned the arozim, the arze halavonoin. Each tree is another nation, and when Mashiach will come, it's going to be a fire that will come down from heaven that will burn these forests, and then the forest will be exposed. Uvehecholoi, and in Hashem's abode, which can mean either in the Beis Hamikdash or means in Shemayim, kuloi, all of the creatures. Whether this refers to the Malachi Hasharis or refers to man who comes to visit the Beis Hamikdash, Oimer, they will declare Kavoid, they will say Baruch Kivoid Hashem in Mekoimai. When the Umay Yisraelim, when they are eliminated, when the wicked people are eliminated, and they who are compared to the trees in the forest, they are burnt and they are consumed, and the forest is exposed, they will be a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. Chazal always say that when the wicked are destroyed, Hashem's name is magnified. There is a revelation of Schar V'Oimish, Din V'Cheshvan. One of the three I was learning recently, the Yud Gimel Ani Mamins. We're actually doing this now in Tfilon. We learned Thursday night. We learned a few people. We learned Thursday night. The Tfilah, so we did 1 week. We'll do probably two more weeks. So the Tfilah, and we learned that the Yud Gimel Ani Mamins. I never knew this stuff, that the Ani Mamins are really divided into two parts. There's 3 plus 10. I always thought there are 13 principles of faith, according to the Rambam. It's not necessarily true. There are really 3 major principles of faith, and from those 3 come an additional 10, and from those 10 come 613 mitzvahs. What are the 3 most basic principles of faith from the Yud Gimel Ani Mamins? Not what you would expect. If you would ask the average person here to hear the 13 Ani Mamins in Ani Mamins and select from the 13 3 that are truly fundamental to the other 10, which of the 3 would the average person select? You'd be surprised what people would say. What Chazal say, what I read, is that the 3 are belief in God, number 2, prophecy, and number 3, reward and punishment. Those are the 3 most basic principles. You have to be in mind that there's a God. Number 2 is that Hashem is part of our lives. And the way that is expressed, that Hashem is part of our lives, is prophecy. The fact that Hashem spoke to Moshe, and Hashem communicates to us, to man, a lowly man, through man, that's an incredible concept. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is purely spiritual. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have anything to do with a human being? The fact, the principle is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his infinite nature of spirituality is willing to have a relationship with human beings to the degree where he communicates with us through a human being, namely Moshe Rabbeinu and his team, all of the prophets. That's a very basic principle of Judaism. And number three, this is also extremely critical, there is reward and punishment. It's not a world of hefker. Everything that you do, there's either reward or punishment. And that's exactly what it says here in this pasuk, that we're asid lavoi, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reveal himself, we're the ayolois. We have over here two metaphors in this pasuk. The nations of the world are compared in this specific pasuk to ayolois and to yeorois. Something that has a life and a tree, a tzimeach and a chai. And the ayolois has its nature of movement, and they will stop in their tracks. And the yeorois is another dimension of the umay sa'olam, mighty, grand trees in the forest, which occupy the entire world, which obscure the big picture. You get lost in the forest. You can't see where you're going because you're obscured by these massive, massive trees. Okay, China, I saw an incredible new technology. China created drones. These sophisticated drones that they work. Unbelievable, you gotta see this video. A whole team of them, like 20 drones. They all work together, teamwork. They communicate with each other and they showed how they're able to navigate in a dense forest. Incredible. In a forest, every Dalet Amos is another tree. You can't go straight. You're going to crash. Everywhere you go, there's a tree here, a tree there, there's this. And if you have 20 of these drones, if you move a little bit, you're going to crash into your neighbor. They're able, these drones are so sophisticated, you could have a pack of 20 drones going through a forest at record speed, navigating not to crash into a tree or a branch or twig, and also not into each other. It's unbelievable. Goiness. You got this. It's unbelievable, the technology. Unbelievable. So when you see that, you have an appreciation of what it means, the Yoharis. What are the Yoharis? The Yoharis are the Umay Salam. You know what the Umay Salam do? They prevent us, Klal Yisrael, as a team, of good moving forward. Klal Yisrael has been given a mission to move forward, to conquer this world. Piru Revu, Milu Es Aretz V'Chivshua. We're that pack of drones. But you can't go forward. You know why you can't go forward? Because the Umay Yisraelim are in your way. Wherever you stand, there's another tree right in front of you. Right in front of you. And you can't, you have to go very slow. Gotta go here, gotta go there, gotta go there. A forest is a forest. And if you move a little bit, not to bump into the tree in front of you, what do you end up doing? You knock into the next guy. And you bang him and he's down and you're down. And you're all ruined. You need the sophistication to be able to go as a pack very swiftly. It's like Star Wars, but it's for real. And not bang into each other and to move ahead. It's unbelievable. That's not reality. I mean, they've made a reality with technology, but human beings. The Umay Sa'olam is the forest. And we are traveling. And we can't move. We're stuck. But Le'osilavai, the Yorois, will be deforestation. It will be cleared away. And then Klal Yisrael can proceed to move. To move ahead, to travel forward in their mission, and when that happens, Baruch Kivoid Hashem Mimikoimai. Okay, modern application of this, of what it says in this pasuk. Kimoi vayechasayf yoyoyes kimoi machsayf al. What is the word yechasayf? Rashi, we need Rashi now. Rashi is the word vayechasayf means machsayf means to expose, to uncover. This refers to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, when he went and he took the sticks, the maklois, he took his knife and he cut off the bark to expose the white part of the bark. The peeling of the white, or the exposure of the white. Yikloif at say hayar, to peel off the branch, the bark of the tree kolaymar. Yafshit mikivaydam. Rashi here is elaborating a little bit over here that the loss of lavay, the umayis elam, they will be stripped of their honor. Hu umayis mishulim at say hayar. The nations of the world are compared to the trees of the forest. Shenema asher ki goyva arazim gavay. Period. Uvehei choloi sheyiboneh. Okay, Rashi learned too that this refers only to the Beis HaMikdash, when we rebuild Kulam or Kavai, Hakol, all of the Jews, the survivors, will praise Hashem, Yikalsu, Sham, V'yoyimru, and they will say words of praise. Now, what will they say? Pasuk Yud, Hashem, Lamabul Yashav. We learned in the Mitzvahs last week, Hashem will establish the world from the time of the Mabul. Vayeshev Hashem Melech Li'olam, Rashi, how does he learn this? Hashem, Lamabul Yashav, Bigdulosa Yichidi. When Hashem brought a Mabul to this world, there was no one in this world other than Hashem. It's an amazing idea. When we do the siglins, they say the same thing, just to review, is that from the time this world was created, there was always a person in this world. Adam was here from day one. There was always a man walking around this world from the time of creation. The world was not finished until Shabbos. When Shabbos came, the world started. That was day one for this world. And who was already in this world? Man. So since day one of this world, there was always a person living in this world. Hashem was not alone. Hashem always had a servant in this world from the time of creation. The only time in the history of this world when there was no human being in this world, it was during the Mabul. Although you'll tell me that Noach and his sons and their family were in the Teva, that doesn't count. The Teva was like a space station. It was taken off the planet. It was put somewhere else. These people were lifted from this world, brought somewhere else. In this world, Olam Hazeh, there was no one. It was only Hashem. Hashem was the Melech. He ruled alone. Was the Melech. Hashem Lamabul Yoshev, the time of the Mabul Yoshev, Hashem occupied this world alone. No one but Hashem. Vayeshev Hashem Melech Le'olam. So Rashi learns, Vayomer, they will say, Lamabul Yoshev Bidulosu Yechidi. Vegam Ata now. Vayeshev Hashem Levadai Melech Le'olam. What does that mean? It means that in a different form, that V'ho'alilim Kolil Yachalif. That when Mashiach will come, all of the idols will be removed from this world, all of the idolaters, and there will be no one left but the Jewish people and whoever else survives, who will acknowledge Hashem's Malchus. Aval la'amoi, but to his nation, yitin oiz, u'birka shalom, Hashem will give us the blessing of peace. But I'm saying there should be Matan Torah, because now Rashi goes back and he says this entire mizmor refers to Matan Torah. The Matan Torah, Shem. Yes?
There's another phrase about Nisgav Hashem
Livado. Oh, okay. Very good.
To this, right?
Nisgav, yes. Correct. Rabbi Sender Shub B'matan Torah. Okay, this goes back to what we learned in the Mitzvah. Rashi also mentioned this a little bit. That the entire Mitzvah refers to Matan Torah. Shenispachadu v'nispahalu. Most of the nations were terrified. U'boluchem Eitzel Bilam. They came to Bilam. The Amrullah, they said to Bilam, Ma kol hehamon sheshamanu. What if do we hear this loud sound? Shem Mabul Hu Bol Havi Lo'ilam. Maybe Hashem is coming to bring to the world another Mabul. Amar Lohem, Bilam said to them, no, Kivar Nishba, Shelo Yavi, Hashem already swore he's not going to bring the Ella Yavi, Ella Kol Hehamoin Shesh Matem, Hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The loud sound that you hear is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Noisin Oiz Liyamo, Noisin, he is giving Torah Liyamo. So we take over here these two psukim. Hashem, according to Rashi's second interpretation, we take Pasuk Yud, Yud Aleph, and it represents a story in history. And this refers to Matan Torah. And the story begins, Hashem Lamabul Yashav. Who made the statement? The nations, me, Omar El Mi. Whenever you learn a Pasuk in Chumash, that is the only question you ask. Or the first question you ask. Whenever you take a Pasuk, me, Omar El Mi. What's the answer according to Rashi's second interpretation? The Umois Ha'olam Omar El Bilam. The nations of the world said to Bilam, Hashem Lamabo Yoshav Vayeshev Hashem Melech Le'olam. Is the world coming to an end? Is Hashem now coming to bring another Mabul to this world so that Hashem will eradicate, he will depopulate the world down to zero, and he will remain in this world alone? Is this what is happening? So next pasuk, Bilam responds, Mi Omar El Mi, Bilam Omar Le'umo Yisraelam. No, that's not what's happening. You're not going nowhere. Don't worry. You're not going to know. This is a private affair. Hashem is giving the Torah to the Jewish people. The loud noise, the commotion, the shaking of the world is nothing more than Hashem giving the Torah to Klal Yisrael. Hashem is giving to the world, to the Jewish people, Oz. Oz is a code word for the Torah. Li'amo yitain. And Hashem, via giving the Torah to the Jewish people, Hashem yivarech, Hashem will bless Es Amo, his nation, with Vashalom, with peace. Okay, so according to Rashi's second interpretation, these two psukim is a reference to the story of Bilam and the Umay Sa'ilam at the time of Matan Torah. Matan Torah, the whole world shook. When it says in the pasuk, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, there were things happening in this world that shook up the world, and the world was in a state of pachat. They thought, who knows what's happening? The glaciers are melting. Global warming is upon us. The world is melting. Asteroids are coming down. Who knows what's going to happen? So they went to Bilam. Bilam has the same gematria as, I'm not going to say who. John Kerry, no. Bilam. Bill. They came to Bilam. Is the world coming to an end? Is the world coming to an end? Mi Omar El Mi. Hashem l'mabul yashav. Is Hashem bringing upon this world another mabul, and Hashem is going to now, vayeshev Hashem melech le'olam, Hashem is going to be the only one left in this world after the world is destroyed, after it's unlivable, when the temperature goes up 20 degrees and all the water evaporates and none of us can exist in this world, Hashem will be the only one left? Bilam said, no, that's not what's happening. Just the opposite. The world's going to blossom with blessing and peace, prosperity, in the merit of the Jewish people who are being mekabel the Torah. Hashem is coming to give oz li'amo yitein. Hashem is coming to give orech esamo v'asholem. Okay, there are two things I want to do before we close down this mizmor. I'm going to read to you the Radak, at least one paragraph, page 253. Back on page 253. Page 253, there's a beautiful Radak. The Radak says, the Hamafarshim, he calls him the Ibn Ezra. He first Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra is very, very short. He elaborates on the Ibn Ezra. Perishu HaMizmar Derech Pshut. Okay, it's page 253. It's in the middle of the Radak. It's the second paragraph. As you see, it's a big paragraph where it says V'hamafarshim. He says that this entire Mizmar is referring to the Niflois HaBorei HaNirim Baretz. We pretty much learned this Mizmar as a reference to Matan Torah, or Jewish history. The Mitzvah David exclusively learned this Mizmar as a reference to what was happening in the world at the time of Matan Torah. Rashi didn't do that really altogether. Rashi says the entire Mizmar refers to different periods of Jewish history. You start off with Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah, coming into Eretz Yisrael. Basically, Jewish history. And then at the end, Rashi says, the last two psukim is the Medrash, he says, refers to the moment of Matan Torah. But in this parish of the Radak, he says, not like the Mitzulis, not like Rashi. He says this entire Mizmar is a description of creation. Or it's a discussion of science. Believe in the science. Believe in
the... Can I point something out?
Yes.
We say this Mizmor when we put away the Sefer Torah, okay? There's your reference to Matan Torah. But we also say that all the Shabbos. Why? I assume because what you just said, because it also has a reference to creation.
Excellent. Think of that. Fantastic. Excellent. That is very good. So let's see how he says, let's see how he describes creation. It's beautiful what he writes. The Amifarshim. Perishu Amizma Zedar Devshutri Al Niflois HaBoirei. The wonders of the Creator. Hanirim Ba'aretz. That you can see in the world. Uvnei Elim. So now every single part of this mizmor has to be reinterpreted in reference to an element of creation. So we learn Elim. Who are the Bnei Elim? Havu Lashem Bnei Elim. So we said it refers to the Bnei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. The Elei Ha'aretz, the mighty ones of the world, were Avraham, our forefathers. But according to the Radak, it refers to the mighty, what are the mighty? The stars. The stars are mighty. The Bnei Elim Yehem Akrechavim. Ki Hamalachim Heim Elim. Now this is elusive with the Targum. The Targum says Elim refers to the angels. Havula Hashem Bnei Elim. We didn't even mention this, but the Targum has an entirely different interpretation on this Mizmar. Havula Hashem Bnei Elim. Ascribe to Hashem greatness, the angels. And that, you know, that, and that fits very well with the end of the Mizmar, where it says, Uvehei Choloi, in Hashem's abode, Kuloi Oimer Kavod. Who is the one in Hashem's abode that says Kavod? The Malachim. V'hoi Fanim. V'chayis HaKodesh. They're the ones that say, Baruch Kivoid Hashem Mimikoimon. So the Targum learns the mismisma refers to the angels giving honor to Hashem. So the Radak is making like a compromise between that, and he is saying that the Kochavim, the stars are representatives of the angels. Let's see. Uperusha Mizmar Dech Peshudu Al Nifla Sabari Hadir Ba'aretz, the wonders of creation. Heim Hamalachim Kim Malachim Heim Elim Kochavim Kim Banim Lachem. This is real, this stuff, if you wouldn't be the Radak, Rav Mordechai, if you would write this, and you would bring this to your Rav, and ask him for Haskama, what's the name of your Sefer? You gave me your Sefer, what's the name of your Sefer? You wrote a Sefer. What's the name of your Sefer? Your Sefer. Tchelis Mordechai. If you would write this in Tchelis Mordechai, and you give it to a Rav for Haskama, they wouldn't give you Haskama. No, nothing personal here. Nothing personal here. But the Radak, he got away with it. Okay? The Radak over here says is that the Hak, the Kochavim, the stars, Kibbonim, this sounds like Greek mythology. Ramachal, no, doesn't this sound like Greek mythology? Ramachal, you ask him what the Radak says over here? This will be censored today. That the Kochavim are the Bonim. Are the children, Lohem, of the angels. Ho, this stuff, Rabbi Yisaido, this would be censored even before you blink. The Chosav, HaChocham, Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra, Zal, Ibn Ezra, he says the most way out stuff. I told you, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zechat Tzav Nevrach, with a person, I will use it today, the Rabbi Zichrimon, the Oitzer Pillar Ois. When he wants to say something way out, he always quotes an Ibn Ezra. And he had a very nice relationship with Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And he presented to him many of his chidushim. And he would tell him, but it says in the Ibn Ezra this. So Reb Chaim says to him, don't bring me a raya from the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra. He's in the league by himself. He says things that are not way off the beaten path. And in Kabbalah he nikaba, but it's not mainstream. The Ibn Ezra is not mainstream, but here he writes something to Ibn Ezra. Ki atam lahaskir hakechavim, ki kefi ma'arachtam, yerdu hageshamim be'ezras elokei ho'elokim. This is very, very fascinating. The reason why we mention the stars is according to their arrangement, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings rain down to this world. Did you ever hear that before? That rain You're saying very good. How does Hashem bring the Mabel? Then Mr. Mishim knows, I'll do it for you. I'll do it. Who is 73 is going to have? Even 1 degree makes a very big difference. Okay, so here it says over here, he says, we know how did Hashem bring the Babel. The way Hashem brought the Babel was he took away two stars. He took out two stars.
Kima, and
what was the other one?
Kima was one of them.
He took out and he changed, and scientifically, I always tell you that Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Ehrenpreis, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, he explained to me that before the Mabel, he told us to Rav Moshe. He told me, he was a very big Talmud of Rav Moshe, he told us to Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe liked this very much, he told me. That before the Mabel, all of our calculations today, we study the sugya of a Birchas Sachama. A Birchas Sachama, there are two calculations. There is Shmuel and Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva is a very accurate calculation, which is kmat, exactly in line with what we know today in the secular world, the calculation of the sun, the moon, all the whole, it's not exactly the same. There is a discrepancy, but it's very, very close. Shmuel is way off. Way off. Shmuel's calculation of how the stars, the moon works is way off. And we follow Shmuel. We follow Shmuel and it's way off. And if Mashiach doesn't come in a certain amount of time, we got big problems. Because it's going to happen that Pesach will not be in Chodesh Sha'aviv. At some point in time, in I don't know how many hundred years, whatever it is, Shmuel's calculation is off. Mar Ukva, his contemporary, is on the dot. It's not exactly according to what we know today. It's a very small difference. So what was Shmuel doing? Why did he do that? So the simple answer they'll tell you in the Hakdama to the Art Scroll Sefer on Birchas Hachaveh is that Shmuel knew Marukva's Shita, but the common man cannot make such complex calculations. Shmuel's calculations is for the common man. And the Torah was given for the common man. So therefore, you don't have to be exact. You follow a calculation that the common man can understand. And that's what we do. Eventually, the Sanhedrin will come along and they'll readjust. Kamiya. Marukva is for, if you have a PhD in mathematics, and you're frustrated that there's no Nobel Prize for mathematicians, then you can study Mar Ukva's opinion. Okay, so Rabbi Dr. Ehrenpreis told me, they told Rav Moshe another pshat. And he said Mar Ukva is working with the assumption that the Earth orbits around the sun in a perfect circle. When I say perfect, I mean perfect. It's not true. The Earth's elliptical. It's elliptical, and the orbit of the sun of the Earth every year is slightly different, because the orbit depends upon the gravitational pull of the planets, and every year as the Earth circles around the sun, the planets are in different locations. We're having now, they raised it, it's going to be a very unique lineup. It's very unique, very, very, very unique. And therefore, it's not exactly the same. When did that happen? When Hashem created the world, did Hashem create the world where the earth went around the sun in a perfect circle? Did Hashem create the world the way it is today, where it's elliptical and it's slightly off? So he suggested, and Rav Moshe gave him an haskama, that when Hashem created the world, the earth went around the sun in a perfect circle.
The earth was perfect circle.
Tilted. He didn't tell me about that. I don't know about that. I didn't discuss that about the
that
axis.
Seasons and that helps with the
seasons. I don't know. You could be right. This already is over my head. But he says the earth, the calculation of Shmuel, he was a mathematician, a world-renowned mathematician, works if you work with the principle that the earth is going around the sun in a perfect circle. Shmuel is on the mark, and that is the way Hashem made the world. And when did it change? It changed. The Gemara says when it changed. The Mabel. Hashem took two stars or two clusters of stars, whatever, these two constellations, whatever it is, Kima, whatever it is, and he removed them. He removed them from Shemayim. What was the consequence? The gravitational pull has been damaged. Every mass creates gravity. And Hashem made a world where it was perfect, where the clusters of stars and whatever's out there brings about the motion, the perfect circle. It's amazing beyond belief that the Earth goes around that the Earth goes around the Sun. Why does the Earth go around the Sun? Why doesn't the Earth just see you later, guys? See you later. Let it go somewhere else. What are the chances that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put enough stars over here, enough stars over here, enough stars over there, so that everyone there checks and balances in Shemayim to keep the earth in place? I mean, going down to the galaxy, there are sections of the galaxy where there's nothing. And then there are sections where there's a massive amount of stars in the very strong gravitational pull. What are the chances that this planetary system is so perfect, is so balanced, that the Earth actually makes a hakafa? When you go Simchas Torah hakafas, Mark, when you go around in a circle, do you always end up, no one distracts you and takes you out off the circle? You make it around the circle? How many people do you know they go around, they never make it around the circle? What happened to them? When you do hakafas on Hashanah Rabbah, you make it around seven times? What are the chances that there are enough stars in Shemayim that the earth, it keeps the earth in check to go around in a circle? B'chlau, forget about a perfect circle. It's mamash nisa v'niflois. And to go around in a perfect circle? Well, that we don't have. But Shmuel, who makes the calculation of zman, of time, assumes it goes in a perfect circle. What went wrong? Mabul. When the Mabul came, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he took away two clusters of stars. He damaged the gravitational system.
The balance.
And that's why now we go in an ellipse. And that ellipse, when it started, it was catastrophic, it was traumatic, it caused the Mabul. And that's when the people no longer lived to the age, the ripe old age of 800-900 years. They began to live a lot less, max 120 years. And that's when decay came into the world. And the world turned into a funny place. The world turned into a strange place because the world was sick. In other words, he's suggesting scientifically, and I don't know if there's any research on this, go ask the big, big mumchem, global warming people, if the world would go around in a perfect circle, would that increase the quality of life on this world? Let's say they would attach to this world some boosters, and have some computer system to change the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, a perfect circle.
Well, I think it will definitely affect the seasons, because the seasons, the summer, the winter, when it's cold, so it's further away.
Okay, the Earth pretty much goes around in a circle, just a little bit off. What would happen if you would make a little adjustment today? You would take some massive rockets and push and adjust the orbit of the Earth.
Well, look at the orbit, that's determined by the seasons of the year.
If
that's
you would,
they say the equinox and
if
the,
scientists
the
today,
equinox was, yeah.
If scientists today would have the technology to take this Earth that we live in and change its orbit from an ellipse to a perfect circle, how would that affect global, what they call global warming, what they call quality of life? How would it affect? So there'll be different. How would it affect? So he suggests that it would be a perfect world. There would be no disease, no sickness. it would be a whole different story. We no longer deserve that. So Hashem...
Anyway, I thought the Jews controlled the weather.
We did not deserve that. So, and when that happened, when Hashem took away this, the gravitational pull, what happened? Well, the first thing happened was a mabul, this readjustment, the global reset. It was a global reset. And the global reset was came through Mamash HaChorban. The readjustment of the world came through a mabul. So guess what he says over here? He says something over here that is so shocking in this Radak, it's beyond belief. Every time it rains, there's a reset on a very, very minor level, not on a mabul level, because just like when I come to Shvarchu, he damaged, he readjusted the orbit. How do you readjust the orbit of the world? By the gravitational pull. Every time there are massive rains, that's because of the gravitational, because the stars like Kima, or stars, are being manipulated. And the stars have an effect on the gravitational pull. And when the rotation is affected, just like at the time of the mabul, when there was a readjustment, it was accompanied by a mabul. So when there's a very large storm, there's also, again, I'm talking over here on a very, very small level. I'm not making this up, that's what he says over here. And the Chosaf, Ibn Ezra, he says the most incredible stuff, the most way out stuff. The Chosaf Hechacham, Rebbe, Avraham Ben Ezra, Zal. Ki atam lahazki akachavim, what's the stars doing here? We're talking about Mayim. We're not talking about the Bnei Elim. The Bnei Elim are stars. Why? What's going on over here? Kikifi ma'arachtam, according to their arrangement in Shemayim, which we understand to mean, according to their arrangement, means the gravitational pull they have upon the earth in its orbit. Yerdu ha'gishamim, rain descends, be'ezras, through the assistance, Elokei ha'elokim. Uperesh Elim, Takifim, the mighty ones, Vidiber Alam Motar, we're describing over here the might of rain, the Omar, Kol Hashem Al Hamoyim, Hashem's voice is upon the water, Veredes Hamotar, the descent of rain, Hume Hanifla Ois HaGedolos, one of the greatest miracles, commercial cost of Ois HaGedolos, V'ein Cheker, beyond investigation, V'yamar Acharav, Hanois the Matar Apne Aretz, V'shlech Maim Apne Chutzos, V'yamar Elihuv, Eoif, Yarein Kel B'koilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he roars with his voice, Nifla Ois, Ois HaGedolos, V'loi Neda, wonders are done and no one even knows about it, V'yamotar Yavoyim Haram, rain comes with thunder, Uberakim, and lightning, Shehem, which are Lahavos Eish, that's why you mentioned over here in this Pasuk, fire, V'yavne HaBorod, and stones, hailstones, Sheshoivrim, that's why it says that the Arozim, there's a key word that's missing, there's a secret word that's missing in this Mizmar, and when you know what's missing, then you understand the whole Mizmar. You know there's one word that's missing, according to the Radak. Borod, hailstones. Why does it say over here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deforestation? How did the deforestation come about? Because the mighty trees were hit by massive hailstones. Why are these hailstones? Because that's what usually accompanies a storm. When there's a storm, when there's rain, violent rain, there are hailstones, massive hailstones, which destroy arozim, oy harash, or the wind. The rash, the thunder, the wind, hamarish arazim, it's all part of the rain. What he's saying over here is an incredible chiddush. Every single pasuk here, an expression in this mizmar, according to the Radak, is describing an element or a facet of the gevurois hagishamim. When it rains, the stars are in motion. The stars have an effect on the rain. There's mighty wind, and there's lightning, and there's loud sounds. Animals are frightened, they run. We all know that. We know that animals are much less sensitive to the weather than human beings. Animals can sense a tsunami 1,000 miles away. They can sense what's happening in the earth. Everything here is describing the Gevurois Geshamim. The Gevurois Geshamim comes with a whole show. Lightning, thunder, wind, hail, rain, the stars, the gravitational effect of the stars is instrumental in bringing this about. And every single part of this mizmor is referring to one thing only. Gevurois HaGeshamim. We're not talking about Matan Torah. We're not talking about Jewish history. We're talking about one thing. Gevurois HaGeshamim. Now, Michal, you can ask the question, so what does the Gevurois HaGeshamim have to do with Shabbos? What does Gevurois HaGeshamim have to do with Matan Torah? No, I don't know.
I was going to say that
it's
not necessarily exclusive.
Right, of course, right. I am from the Torah. We're focusing on other things over here.
He may acknowledge those other things as well.
Right. This is just one facet. I am from the Torah. Oh, so he's saying Rav Mordechai is saying G'dayl G'vuras G'sham Shiyem Shishnir the Torah. What's Levadim in Syria? Okay, he says those are mountains that we're familiar with. V'chein harash yachil midbar v'hiskir midbar kodesh u'midbar gadol v'hiskir ayolois ki leidasan kasha sharacham on tzana. This is a general thing about another concept of the ayolois, which we're not going to talk about is how they give birth. The ayolois from all of the creatures, this really is going on a different topic. How does it relate? How does it relate to rain? I don't know. This seems to be something entirely different, which Lam and Midrashim focus on. From all of the creatures of this world, which creature has the hardest time giving birth? Human beings? No, not necessarily. The Ayala, it's the Ayala. The Ayala, Hashem made in this world, Kriya Urviya. Chazal always, they focus on the Ayolo. The Ayolo that's pregnant is in a lot of trouble because there's no way to get the baby out. All creatures in this world, when they reproduce, they have a technique. Look, chickens lay eggs. The egg comes out. How does the egg come out? Hashem creates an opening. There are muscles and the egg is laid. Then the chicken has to, okay, you know, it sits on the egg, keep it warm, and then the egg hatches. But the egg has to get out of the body. How does the egg release from the body? Hashem made it that it's released. How do fish also, the eggs come out, you're dealing with animals, mammals. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a system for creatures to reproduce, including human beings. The Ayolah, from our perspective, would be a defective creature. Because when the Ayala is pregnant, there's really no way for its fetus to get out. It does not possess the muscles, the biology, for it to have an easy labor. And it's in a lot of trouble.
I think it's a narrow womb.
Yeah, so scientists will be baffled. I mean, what do you do, Hashem? You didn't give this creature a chance. This creature is able to become pregnant. But then when it's pregnant and it's time to give birth, you know, what's it going to do? They don't have hospitals to give C-sections for all the Ayolas. How are they going to get the baby out? So Hashem says, I got it covered. Don't worry. I made the Ayola. I take care of it. And Hashem does unusual hashkocha pratis for the Ayola to give birth. And Kadosh Baruch Hu causes a snake to be in the right place at the right time and to sting the ayala, and the poison, the venom, what we would call the venom of the snake, causes a reaction, a muscle reaction that's not natural in the ayala, like some type of paralysis, whatever it is, or whatever, and it causes the rechem to open up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he arranges. He makes arrangements of when this is going to happen. The Ayala needs someone to help it give birth. Most other creatures don't need anyone. Okay, human beings, you can't have a baby on by your own, you need help. Now let's say a woman, so what did Shifra and Pua say to Paro? They don't need me. So Pella, what she said is an incredible chachma. What's the pasuk? The pasuk is, I remember the pasuk. That before I come to them, before we arrive on the scene, they already gave birth. They're like animals. The Jewish women are like animals. They don't need assistance. But other human beings do need assistance. Well, there's one exception. And that's why Klal Yisrael is very much associated with this creature, the Ayala. The Ayala needs assistance. It can't do it on its own. Who does the assistance? A miracle. Hashem arranges a snake to be present at the time when the Ayala needs to give birth, and the snake bites, stings the Ayala in the rechem, which causes a chemical reaction that affects the muscles of the rechem to contract or to do what they need to do to open up the rechem for the baby to come out.
Didn't you say the Ayala also bring water to...
It's the Shrech Tzibor, that's the Ayol, that's the male, the Zohar, the Ayol.
There are three things reserved to the Rosh Hashanah: water,
birth,
and money.
The Pesach, the Mavtecha, Parnos, no, that's Geshem, Geshem, give me Tchiyas HaMeisim. Tchiyas HaMeisim. Right, the Mavtecha of Leda is in the hands of Hashem, correct. Crap. But here, this little tree that over here, this marriage over here, we'll finish with this, we're going to stop. Over here it says, in the middle of here of the Radak, before the end of the first, that the middle paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the Hizkir Ho'aya, Lois Kilei, the son, Koshe, Sherachem Ansar, Umichoyze Kol Yifchadu. Now he's saying something different than I just told you. What I told you was the Medrash. Here it says another technique that the Shvarku has. Hashem brings thunder at the right time, and that thunder causes a reaction. It causes the ayolah to be afraid, and that causes the rechem to open and to give birth. V'choylelu v'yiposach rachmon. It's a murdik musa haska. People in life, things happen to them, and it causes them incredible pachad, and they're very disturbed. They don't realize that if not for what's happening, the greater good would never come about. What's the ultimate greater good for this Ayala? She has a baby. She wants to get a mazel tov. She needs a mazel tov. How? But it's impossible. The nature of an Ayala, the baby is not coming out. It's going to kill the mother because there's no way for the womb to naturally open up. It needs something unusual. I told you the Medrash that the snake comes and bites it. This is another, he's calling another chazal, is where pachat, there's a thunderstorm, and the Ayala sees the thunder and lightning, hears the thunder and sees the lightning, is terrified. The terror triggers something unusual in its biology, which causes its muscles to weaken and for the baby to come out. So the Ayala here is terrified. Little does the Ayala know that the terror that's experiencing is the cause, the root cause